The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Families that go here, grow here.
Just a little after 9:32, we're joined today by CNN anchor and correspondent Max Foster. Good morning, Max. What a pleasure to meet you.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
As a news junkie and a CNN aficionado, it's great to see you in real life. So thanks for being here today. This was not this studio, but obviously the radio studio was your sort of beginnings. Going back to hospital radio, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's lovely to be back. I mean, this was my first love, really.
Yeah.
So intimacy of radio. And I think it's just, I mean, you know, what you have with your listeners is so intimate. I think it's, I don't know, it's a very powerful medium. I'd love to go back to it at some point. I ended up in TV from radio.
No, it's funny because for years as a younger guy, I always thought TV was the golden fleece. And then and I'm fortunate enough to be able to do TV and I love it. But as I get older, the radio has this lovely attraction. The word that you use is one I always associate with radio, which is intimacy, and there's this sort of strange connection with the listener that you can't quite get with a viewer.
Yeah, so I was, I remember there's a friend of mine at school and she asked me this question, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I actually did say TV presenter.
Yeah.
And she was working at the BBC local radio station and I said, oh, could you get me in there? And she goes, I'll speak to them. And they wouldn't speak to me. Anyway, I wrote to them and they said, no, we can't have you at all. But I was still quite keen. So I applied to the local hospital radio station.
Yeah.
And they did let me in. And it actually is one of those blessings, isn't it? Where I had a whole show rather than running around sort of making tea as you would at RTE or BBC.
Yeah, which I was doing here for years.
Yeah.
Teeing. But you got the show. So you were able to get kind of air miles on a regional plane.
Well, yeah, but it's also this amazing, it had a very small audience, but it was people in bed ill. And it was, I very quickly learned that they were completely dependent on it. They didn't have anything else at that time.
Yes.
And they were listening. And I was trying to figure out what they wanted. And actually, they weren't depressed. They wanted uplifting stuff. So I would do these entertainment sort of segments.
Yeah.
And it did quite well. And then I brought some friends in and they swore on air. And then I got told off massively. And thankfully, people were listening. And then from that, I wanted to go in. I decided I did want to go into broadcasting. And then at the time, to get into the, you know, into broadcasting ITV or BBC, you needed a degree. So I went off and did a degree.
Yes.
When I went to Cardiff University. And I got some work experience eventually at the BBC in London. And they put me in touch with someone in Cardiff who was producing Rob Brydon's show.
Oh, yeah.
So he had this show that went on Radio Wales and on Radio 5. And they had this brilliant scheme trying to bring young people on. So if you were a student or a local, you could go and put reports together.
You got to go.
So I got to go. And I got there's this little deal. I used my, it was, at the time, the student union in Cardiff was one of the major gigging points around the UK. So bands would go to the union. So I'd use my student credentials to get in there and then I'd interview them for the BBC and the BBC was getting all these exclusives.
Great. Well, so that was clever.
Yeah, and that's what got me into journalism.
And now CNN, of course.
Yeah.
That was a big leap across the Atlantic. Why did you do that? I mean, it's probably obvious it's such a big organisation, but give me a sense of that move.
Well, I went through BBC local radio, then I went to World Service Radio, and then I got a transfer to TV, and I ended up on BBC Breakfast reporting as a business reporter. And there, at the time, I was doing a bit of business presenting, but Moira Stewart was doing the news anchoring, and Dermot and who was he anchoring with at the time? I can't remember, but the main anchors decided they didn't want to come in as early anymore.
Yeah.
So they asked Moira and I to do the first half hour. I only did it for a while, but someone at CNN saw that and they offered me a job.
And
at
so
CNN London.
And so it began. What was it about journalism that you wanted to tackle? Did you want to get inside people's minds? Did you want to tell the story? Did you want to learn more? I mean, what was the driving force behind? Did you emulate somebody? Did you want to be?
No,
like somebody?
I've never really had because I sort of ended up doing. I started off wanting to do entertainment, and then I ended up in journalism. I mean, one of the big stories I had at Cardiff was defining was I saw Anthony Hopkins in a restaurant and I didn't want to disturb him, but I left him a letter and I said, would you possibly do an interview? I'm a struggling student journalist.
Yeah.
I'd love to get. And he wrote back a few months later and said, yes. And
amazing.
I got an interview with him And he hadn't spoken about whether he'd do a second Science of the Lambs at the time, and he had just got a knighthood, and he hadn't spoken about any of it. But that interview got on, and it was the buzz from that. All the newspapers picked it up, and it was partly the impact of journalism. And entertainment's great, and it's fun, but I liked that buzz. And then the more I did it, the more it became a public service thing, really. And now, if I'm honest, it's about defending democracy. And particularly when the experience we've had in journalism in recent years with autocratic leaders, if yes. I can call it that.
Of course.
Undermining us.
Yeah.
I've become very defensive of our industry and how it's a pillar of our democracy. And if people don't get the right information, they can't make the right decisions. And politicians that don't like that being challenged are trying to undermine us. And that worries me.
That began for me, let's go down that road for a moment, because that began for me from as a viewer to watch it with largely CNN, with Donald Trump. And the ugliest abuse from him as a candidate and subsequently as a president being shouted from that very important pulpit that he had to point at all the journals and the hacks down the back, but to single out names, to single out organisations, and thereby sowing mistrust, fake news, these words, and they all got traction. Yeah. And the ugliness was real. And I felt, to be honest with you, from as somebody who, most people, read a bit of history, that it felt 1930s stuff, and it felt very menacing and very threatening, very ugly and very unclean.
Yeah. Well, it sucks people in. I mean, what really worries me is people want you to be part of their campaign. So, I don't know, one day you'll do a story which is seen as pro-Trump or pro-Israel or pro-Turkey or pro-Meghan and Harry as opposed to Kate and William. And then the next day, you're seen as pro the other side. And you and I just see that as, we're just trying to do accurate, balanced reporting.
Yes.
And it wasn't pro in the first place. It was just your interpretation is that it's pro. But if you're not pro their side of the view, they start trolling you.
Yes.
And it's hard. I mean, it's tough. And I get it all the time on a whole range of issues. And even now, I've just said Israel, and people are saying, well, you didn't say Palestine. Yeah. It's going to be... It's so complex, but there's a lack of respect for our industry and what we do. And that's come from politicians trying to undermine us because they don't want to be challenged.
Yes.
So we have to sort of fight back, but we're not going to fight back in the same sort of way. We just need young people to realise that accuracy and information and facts matter, which is why I've never gone down the route of being expressing any sort of opinion. I'm still very much down the line.
Yes.
But that, is a problem in itself because people say, well, you do have an opinion, don't you? So you're being fake by not expressing your opinion.
You can't win now if you go down that.
But that's just a tradition. Yeah. I mean, I'm just sticking to that.
On the idea of trolling and online, all that, I'm so fed up and bored of it. I'm bored of the people who do it. I'm fed up of caring about negativity, about one's role and job. That there's something very liberating in, and I really mean
in
this.
Blocking.
Sincerely ignoring it. So now, fortunately, you probably have to be on Twitter for your job. I don't. I'm on Instagram. Any sign of trouble, they're gone. So it's fine. It's like a well-run pub. Mm. But people might come up to me, as people love to bring a bit of bad news to your door, as they say, and say, God, there's a lot of hitting the fan there on Twitter. I say, well, I don't know. Now, a lot of people say, I didn't know that. They know damn well because they're reading that stuff.
Mm.
But you can make... a personal choice not to head into the marsh.
Well, it's a shame. I like constructive criticism.
You won't get it on Twitter.
No, but you do occasionally. So then that's useful. You were wrong on that because. But it's the personal stuff that I struggle with. This is typical you. You call yourself a journalist and all of this.
You're reading this,
or,
Max.
And then some of them are really smart and they will say, but you said this, that. They'll be very selective about what you said.
Yeah.
And then pretend that you've had a narrative and then that will blow up. And that's very frustrating. I mean, when I was at the World Service, we didn't have the internet, and people used to send in letters.
What a
and
joyful!
Some of them were really harsh,
yes.
But because they'd sat down and written a letter, they're really well thought
that's
out, and
it.
I find it really useful.
Yes,
and I'd write back and say thank you, even though this completely slated me. But I think that I don't know what Twitter. I mean, Twitter's very useful to me as a journalist in terms of
news.
It alerts me to stories. But it's not useful in terms of interacting with people, and partly because it's all journalists and politicians and people on there anyway, and they're not the people I'm necessarily trying to reach, if I'm being honest.
I'd echo chamber vibe.
I want to reach the mainstream.
Let's talk about... have you seen Hamilton, by the way, the musical?
No.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. No, yes. The reason I bring it up is because King George III, yeah. and he's a character that comes out in the middle of it, and he's the comic turn. I mean, they don't get into his madness. He's just a sort of a camp fae... royal figure who everyone in the audience cheers and laughs at, but it's very funny. Point I'm making is the British relationship with the royal family, and this is where one of your many strengths in terms of reporting. The American relationship with the UK royal family is intriguing. They seem to love it. Are they watching the Kardashians with tiaras, or are they watching a deeply historical institution and all that goes with it? I just can't understand their obsession, given the republic.
Well, I don't know if it's the same in Ireland, but certainly in the UK, there's an impression that Americans are obsessed with Diana and Meghan, particularly. I don't think that's true. The obsession was always the Queen, actually, and her as a head of state and a figure of the UK, but it does combine with the Disney princess and young people growing up with Disney princesses and Disney being such a overpowering sort of media, you know, monolith in America. So I think a lot of young... I remember going back to Kate and William's wedding, which is when I first got involved in royal reporting. One of the producers in America of one of the networks said to me, we're going to get up early and we're targeting mothers and daughters who are getting up early to watch this because this is their childhood. So I think it's that.
Okay.
So it's so ingrained in their culture. But also it's a celebrity culture to a large extent. And royalty is a level above celebrity, I think, somehow. And it's unattainable, which is quite a hard concept for Americans to comprehend, because you can become anyone can become president in America,
yes, yeah.
But no one can become head of state in the UK unless you're born or married in.
Okay.
And I think that actually defines the difference in the cultures, probably with Ireland as well. There's a bit of a lid on living in the UK.
To what do you attribute the Harry mania vis-a-vis, and I mean that not necessarily like Beatlemania, I mean it as a mania of interest, for right or for wrong.
Yeah, but I think that it's the same mania in the UK. I mean, the tone has changed slightly. If you're talking about the Disney princess, I mean, Meghan epitomised that, didn't she, at that wedding?
Yeah, but
she was
all seemed to
a very ordinary girl on the face of it, who was getting married in a castle, a medieval castle.
But now they're horrible
Prince Harry.
About her. You know, she, or depending on who you believe.
I think, that, you know, in America, there's divisiveness about them as well.
Yeah.
What I'd also say is, you know, they are fascinated by royalty. They were fascinated by the Queen. And although a lot of those people who are fascinated with royalty are still fascinated by Kate, for example, they see her as the ultimate princess.
Mm.
We'll see what happens with Meghan and Harry. I mean, what I would say is that whenever they talk about the royal family, there's huge interest, but they talk about a lot of other things as well as they try to redefine themselves. And it's whether or not they can transfer that interest into their new life.
You've written about clout and, you know, what that is. I think I'm intrigued by it because it's a word that, I don't know what the dictionary definition of clout, heft, influence. How would you define clout and who has it?
Well, I don't think it's just influence. It's more than influence. It's someone that has clout in, you know, just watching all the LeBron James videos on the way over. I mean, He's just got this mega record in the NBA. I mean, he's got clout, hasn't he? It's a sort of presence. It was a self-published book. It's not a big deal. But what I ended up with that book was, I was trying to, you know, it's our privilege, isn't it? You and I, we to see behind the scenes and meet powerful people. And we have a chat with them off camera. And it was, you know, letting people into that world a bit and making them realise that actually all those people have got the same insecurities as everyone else.
And the rest.
And actually, I do believe anyone can do anything.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with
and
you.
And it's from that.
Yeah.
And I think the one sort of thing that all these people have got in common is they live in this fear and they're driven by fear. And fear isn't a bad thing. But, you know, you might have someone that's come from this horrible background and they're hugely successful. And what keeps them going is they don't want to go back to where they end, they started. And that's what drives them all the time. And actually, there is, you know, a friend of mine, he's a surfer in Cornwall, very happy life. And he thinks I've got the worst life in the world. So I'm running around and I'm really hectic and I'm so busy and I never relax. And, you know, has he got it right or have I got it right? I'm just sort of driven, but he's sort of very happily sitting on a beach in Cornwall.
It's a case-by-case basis. You know, one person's ideal life is very different to another. We don't have a heap of time left, but I'm looking at the list of names of people among them that you've interviewed. I'm going to say a name and I want you to answer in one word your thoughts on the person.
Goodness.
How that's really mean, isn't it?
Yeah.
Totally caught you on the hop here. Do you want to give it a go for a few names?
Not?
Let's see if we go. Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
In a word.
In a word.
Yeah. You got it, man.
Funny.
Funny. That'll do fine. Tony Blair.
Elusive.
Dolly Parton.
Just amazing.
That'll do. George Lucas.
Very serious or serious.
Serious will do. Michael Caine.
Personable.
Lovely. Elton John. Silence is the answer. I'll take that as a word.
Well, can I say more? He wasn't as confident as I...
As you expected.
Furnish was like, very impressive.
Okay. Bill Gates.
Nerdy.
Perfect. That's a great compliment. Steve Jobs.
Passionate.
And finally, Donald Trump.
Confusing.
I'm sorry for catching on the hop, but I really enjoyed that one word take because you've met them all face to face and that'll do nicely. Okay, you are heading off. You have a lecture at 10 o'clock in UCD. Do you want to tell us what that is? You're part of the academy
there? Well, I'm going to find out a bit more about it.
Yeah, of course.
CNN has set up an academy and they're tying up with UCD. This is the first year of this postgrad. And I think it's brilliant in the sense that this is students who are, well, like, people like me, producers, all of the people behind the scenes, come in and talk about what we do and give sort of masterclasses.
Fascinating.
And what I like about that is that we're current and we're doing it now. So they can ask whatever they like, but I'm going to talk to them about how to do breaking news, how to package, and they can really ask me whatever questions they like. And we do a big sort of simulation once a year in Abu Dhabi where all the different students from all around the world will go in and get involved in a proper breaking news story.
That sounds fascinating. It's an MA in Journalism and International Affairs, which is, as you say, it's accredited by UCD and delivered with CNN Academy. So you're part of the show today. So good luck with the lecture this morning, Max, and thanks for being with us. Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Good luck with everything you do.
Thanks for having
me. Max Foster of CNN joining us live this Wednesday morning. Just had to check the day there.